saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. The liberal globalist order is on its brink and awakening a new conservative age. I'm Dr. Steve Turley. Join me every day as we discover answers to today's toughest challenges and explore the revitalization of conservative civilization. This is Turley Talks.
Love it, like it, lump it. Trump's remaking the United States of America. I can't think of a more influential president during this century, and it starts here with tariffs. In the United States, get this, it's down. It's going to be down at least 60%. We may be dealing with, get this, negative net migration to the United States in 2025. That would be the first time there is negative net migration in this country in at least 50 years. We're talking about down from 2.8 million.
Well, CNN has just admitted something so big, it's shaking the very foundations of their years-long narrative. For the first time in over 50 years, net migration to the United States is on track to be negative. That's right. More people are leaving than coming in. And it's all thanks to the bold America First policies of President Donald J. Trump. And that's why Harry Enten, their senior data analyst, just called Trump the most influential president of the last century. Now, according to CNN's analysis, net migration is projected to drop by at least 60% in 2025, hitting negative territory for the first time since the 1970s. So just last year, net migration was nearly 3 million people. Well, now we're looking at a complete reversal of that, with more folks headed out than coming in. President Trump is delivering on the promises he made on the campaign trail, cracking down on illegal migration, securing our borders, and putting American citizens first. Now, this is a victory for every American who's been demanding a secure border. For years, we've watched as open border policies under previous administrations flooded our communities with illegal migrants, straining our schools, our hospitals, our welfare systems. But now ICE is in action, deporting those who shouldn't be here in the first place. And it's not just ICE. Self-deportations are also spiking as people realize the free ride is over. Trump's policies are sending a clear message. America is a nation of laws, and those laws will be enforced. He's brought back policies like Remain in Mexico. He's slashed refugee admissions that were being abused, and he's cracked down on visa overstays. CNN's analyst Harry Enten then went on to say that President Trump is the most influential president of the past century. This isn't because Trump is tweaking policy. It's because he's actually remaking America, as even CNN is reluctantly admitting. From immigration to trade to the sheer volume of executive orders, he's moving at a pace that leaves his predecessors in the dust. Trump is highly effective at enforcing his agenda. He's getting things done with an unprecedented level of action. In just the first 6 months of his second term, he signed 180 executive orders. For context, Biden managed just 77 in his entire first year. And we don't even know how many of those he actually personally signed. Trump's moving at a pace we haven't seen since FDR. And every one of those orders is about cutting red tape, boosting the economy, or protecting our sovereignty. So this is a huge moment for conservatives. I mean, we've been fighting for a leader who actually accomplishes important things for an America First agenda. And Trump is that leader. He's incredibly effective. The globalist liberal West has fought to keep him out of power and get in his way precisely because they know that his America First agenda is the end for them. This is part of what sets him apart. He's not beholden to the swamp, the globalists, the woke mob. He's fighting for Americans. And this is why so many forces hate him and are trying to undermine him. Well, joining me today to discuss what's going on with Trump's agenda is my good friend and international geopolitical analyst, Konstantin von Hofmeister. Konstantin is editor-in-chief at Arctos Publishing, and he is the author of two phenomenal books, Esoteric Trumpism and Multipolarity. I had the honor of writing the introduction to that. And he also has a brand new edition. This is from Arctos Publishing, of Guillaume Fay's Archaeofuturism. You know, I talk often about this notion of archaeofuturism, and Konstantin and I will talk about that as well. If you have not read this book, this is your opportunity to do just that. Konstantin, welcome. Great to see you as always.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it, and I'm very grateful to you, of course.
Well, I'm always grateful to you for spending some time to chat with us. You've been, Konstantin, you know, you and I, we've talked hours together. You've been on the forefront of this rising tide of national sovereignty all over the world, the revitalization of culture, tradition, custom. Arctos Publishing is dedicated to helping to educate in that. How do you see this historic drop in net migration, particularly here in the United States, that just seems to have such open borders over the years? We're talking, it's down 60%, potentially negative net migration for the first time in over 50 years. What's the significance of that, particularly in relation to Trump's role in reasserting American national identity?
Well, I think it is all part of the so-called vibe shift that we're witnessing, especially in the United States, but also in the West as a whole. And what you mentioned earlier, that Trump is the most influential president in quite a long time, is definitely true because of this vibe shift, because it is not just the policies that he enacts and the executive orders that he signs, but it is a general mood, I would say, in the country that is basically influencing events and making them happen even without direct action. What do I mean by this? I mean that people in general in the United States, at least a very large percentage of citizens, support what Donald Trump stands for, which is MAGA, of course. And I call it Trumpism as the movement, which is about the reassertion of, as you said, national sovereignty. And I think this is the most important thing in today's age, where globalism basically threatens to undermine the sovereignties of all nations and destroy their makeup by diluting the populace, basically, with elements that are alien to the culture and civilization that the country represents. And I think Donald Trump reasserts true American culture, and he wants to go back to what America used to be, I think, before it became sort of watered down with the globalist influence and mass immigration. And like the Democrats always emphasize, like different values that are applicable supposedly all over the world, and everybody's the same, and they want to level everything down. But Trump insists that America is different, it is exceptional, and Americans should be proud of it, of course. And when you say that, yeah, he signs a lot of executive orders, of course, it's very good and it's very effective. The only issue I see is that if there's no continuity, if MAGA does not become dynastic, in my opinion, then it basically has no future, because there is, I suppose, a possibility, even though remote at the time because of the weakness of the Democratic Party, that another Democrat president might come into power in 2028, and this president might undermine everything that Trump is trying to build, and then we're basically back to square one. So we basically need some kind of continuity to make MAGA not just, I would say, a blip or a four-year golden age, but a real turning point for the United States. So the United States, even in the future, can become, I would say, the guiding light for the West as a whole, because that's what America has always been, right? I mean, for good or for bad, because everything that happens in America happens in the rest of the West, especially in Western Europe, usually with a delay of like 10 or 15 years. So if you have like a long-term MAGA movement, you could really see a shift, not just in the United States, but in the West as a whole, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking JD's speech back in February at the Munich Security Council, he went full MAGA and all the NATO leaders gathered there and then met with Alice Weidel of AFD and he completely blew off Olaf Scholz. And I'm just like, wow. Yeah, it's for good or for bad. The influence of America is inevitably going to wash across the continent of Europe as well. You know, I thought about you because you, in your book, Esoteric Trumpism, one of the main themes of the book is that the attraction to Trump is he's not so much, and I talk about this a lot on the channel, influenced by you, it's not pragmatic attraction or political attraction or anything like that. It's very mythic in many respects. Trump channels these archetypes that help these archetypes that guide civilization, or civilization is guided by. And I thought of you because Harry Enten, as I mentioned earlier, talked about Trump being, and this is CNN, I mean, I can't even believe they're saying it, the most influential president we've seen in the last century, citing the unprecedented pace of the executive order, 180 executive orders in 6 months. And in your book, you compare Trump to historical figures like Andrew Jackson, and in these very mythic terms. Can you elaborate on how that embodiment of heroic leadership is evident today with Trump?
Yeah, I think it is absolutely evident, because we have to look beyond Trump the man and look at Trump as a symbol and as an idea. We have to look at what he actually represents more than what he as a human being does, because all human beings are flawed, obviously. Nobody's perfect, including Trump. But what he represents and what he triggered is absolutely momentous and history changing in a really, really, really big way. Because Trump, in my opinion, is basically an instrument of history. Whether he is conscious of this, whether he wants this or not, is actually quite irrelevant. Because sometimes history chooses certain individuals to propel the course of events into a radically different direction, because a course change is absolutely necessary if we don't want to end up in total dissolution. And I think Trump is this person. It is quite evident to me. And this is why he's so polarizing, because all great men in history, including Andrew Jackson and Julius Caesar, were polarizing. I mean, Julius Caesar, he crossed the Rubicon with his military. He refused to stay in the province that he was assigned to. And he crossed the Rubicon, marched towards Rome with the legions that were loyal to him, defeated Pompey in the Civil War, and basically declared himself dictator, became the most famous Roman in all of history, pretty much, obviously, Julius Caesar, and really made Rome a glorious empire. And I think Trump has the potential. I'm not saying that he should declare himself dictator, obviously, but he has the potential to be such a figure that can rally the popular masses around him and not the elite, because Julius Caesar himself allied himself with the populares, with the populace, basically, against the parasitical aristocrats. And so did Andrew Jackson, who smashed the parasitical bank, for example, rallied the masses around him for the glory of the nation and not just for the interests of some shadowy deep state figures, basically. I think Trump triggered the same. And as I said earlier, it is not just in the United States that his influence is felt, but also among patriotic forces in Europe. I mean, you mentioned J.D. Vance's glorious speech in Munich, but just quite recently, like Donald Trump was in Scotland, and
right, yeah, that's right.
So went on about like how basically the European leaders are ruining their nations by flooding them with culturally incompatible immigrants, yeah. Basically. And he said, you need to stop this, basically. And so you have this new administration. You have J.D. Vance, who pointed out in Munich that there is no free speech in Europe. You have Trump, who pointed out that mass immigration, especially the illegal kind, is destroying Western Europe, basically, right. As it right. was destroying the United States before Trump right. came to power and put a stop to it.
That's right. Yeah. And to the maddening part of it, I know for Europeans is, as Nigel Farage pointed out, our big problem here was illegal immigration. Your big problem is legal immigration, right? I mean, it's just the opening up of the borders by the bullies in Brussels without any semblance of care for maintaining the unique cultures, customs, and traditions on the continent. And we all know where they end up anyway, if they because of the Schengen protocol, they're all going up in your neck of the woods, in your backyard. They all just want to go to Germany for all the, well, because of its economy and all of its welfare benefits. But you mentioned Julius Caesar, because you talk about in your book on esoteric Trumpism, you talk about the importance of Oswald Spengler, identified as a Caesar figure throughout history, where civilizations are on the brink and they look like they're about to fall, and the people just naturally long for a kind of Caesar figure to save them. And I remember watching a CNN episode, and I did a video on this. I think I even sent it to you, where Trump is walking in to a UFC fight. I think it was in Madison Square Garden, people going nuts. And even the CNN panelist said it was like Caesar returning and going into the Colosseum, having conquered the enemies and so forth. And he had his whole entourage, Marco Rubio's behind him, Tulsi Gabbard, RFK, and just the way they were walking, you can't help it. Yeah, there's a vibe that they are embodying, whether they know it or not. There are historical winds that they're embodying. But you were writing about that back in 20. I think this came out in 24.
Yes.
You were recognizing that. Literally months before we all saw it explicitly. Can you just go a little bit into depth on Oswald Spengler and this notion of a Caesar figure and how Trump is embodying particularly that?
Yeah, just to summarize real quick. So Oswald Spengler is a German philosopher, historian, who's most famous for his book, The Decline of the West, which he actually wrote in the 1920s, so over 100 years ago. And in this book, he says that all civilizations, including the West, are basically like organisms, like a human life, like a human being. They are born, they mature, they grow old, and then they wither and then they die. And he says it's completely inevitable. It's just the way of the world, basically, because nothing lasts forever in this material world of ours. And he specifically talks about the West and the end stage of the West, because even 100 years ago, he felt that the West is already in terminal decline because of decadence, debauchery, loss of values, loss of culture, and now, ultimately, what we're seeing now, especially in Europe, is a loss of identity. Yes, when people don't really know who they are and who they belong to, which ethnos they actually belong to. They don't have this feeling of belonging anymore. Everything is in total dissolution. And according to Oswald Spengler, in this period of dissolution that the West is undergoing, there will arise strong leaders, strong figures, he calls them the Caesars, the rise of the Caesars in the end stage of the West, who will try to sort of stem the tide of decline and reassert the former glory that the West represented, the Faustian spirit, so to speak. And right. Well, Yeah, it is my belief that Trump is one of these figures. It's very, very apparent to me. And we have other figures on the world stage who I would also describe as Caesar figures, like Viktor Orban in Hungary would be one, Vladimir Putin in Russia for sure,
absolutely,
and Donald Trump, Modi in India, if you want to talk mm-hmm. about yeah. other cultures as well. And these people basically tap into the, I would say, what Carl Jung, the famous Swiss psychologist, described as sort of like the collective unconscious, the soul of a people, basically. And
yeah.
what these people actually represent in an archetypal way, basically. So Trump is sort of also like an archetype. It's sort yeah. of like almost like a Hindu avatar of yeah. some sort of deity, basically. So he is more than a man. You have to look beyond Trump as a person and look at Trump as the avatar that is coming, basically, to avenge the people against the usurpers, basically.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, sorry. So I mean, this is basically what I was trying to express in the book. I mean, this is the main point. It's not really about Trump and
right.
what he as a human being does, but the movement and the force that he engendered, basically.
Yeah, and again, that's what I love about the esoteric, these forces, these historical forces that are happening and are manifesting themselves. Yeah, and in this avatar sort of way, I think Michael Millerman likes to refer to him as the Sun King, you know, it's just especially with the blonde hair and so on. But just having this almost mandate from heaven kind of, you know, he's not this. The fascinating thing is he's not the trained politician.
Exactly.
He isn't looking at focus groups and so on and so forth. He seems to be above the fray of the whole DC swamp like frames of reference that all the other politicians are caught up in. JD Vance seems to have a little bit of that as well, seems to be very much. Well, all of them, everyone who's surrounding Trump seems to be a bit above that. Now, that said, I'm curious what you think, Constantine, based on what you've been seeing, particularly on the international stage. That said, what would you think, what would you describe as perhaps the greatest threat to Trump's conservative nationalist agenda? I know, as I'm sure you know, many MAGA faithful were very nervous about the Tehran strike. We didn't want to get bogged down in another. We didn't even know why we were intervening in that in the first place. We're very nervous of the way Trump has been talking tough against Putin of late. Almost sounds identical to Biden in the way he's talking about Russia. What do you think is that the greatest risk? Are the neocons still around exercising influence? What do you think's going on there?
Well, the neocons are definitely still around, of course. Talking quickly about the strike on Iran, in my opinion, it was quite a brilliant chess move of Trump, basically, because no matter what people say on X, on Facebook or wherever, like they say, okay, well, Trump attacked Iran and he promised peace. Well, he didn't actually start a war, right? I mean, there's no war going on between the United States and Iran. And Trump is not a king and he's not emperor, so he can't make all decisions and basically decide what is happening in U.S. policy. I mean, the United States is still a republic, and you still have checks and balances. And I think there are different factions around Trump, like very powerful factions. And I think Trump has to basically do a balancing act by pleasing these factions, because I think he cannot alienate these factions, because they might harm him in a very bad way if he did so. So in the case of Iran, I think, of course, you have the neocons that were screaming for war with Iran, and also they still have a lot of influence, I would say, with the deep state, still not unseated, in my opinion, or dethroned. And he had to please this faction, and he did it quite brilliantly. I think he did the same in his first administration. He also did like a sort of contained strike, basically.
Soleimani strike, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That didn't really have major repercussions and also didn't lead to a war. So in that sense, I think it was a brilliant chess move, and he did very well. in my opinion. So I would never criticize him for this. Yeah, what's going on with Ukraine now, of course, it's the neocons. And I think Trump is genuinely disappointed that he wasn't able, basically, to broker peace as he had promised during his campaign for the presidency. So I think he's losing patience. I mean, he's a human being after all, so he's losing patience. He's trying all kinds of art of the deal move, so to speak, like carrot and the stick, basically. Now it's more the stick, less the carrot, right, at the moment. Right. But I think he's underestimating Russian resolve. And I think it's because he doesn't understand that the Russians are not impressed with a stick. And it's
well said. That was well said, Constantine. I don't think a lot of our American audience necessarily recognizes. I love how you just put that. Russians are not impressed with sticks. They dealt with sticks for 1,000 years. They're not impressed.
And the Russians will continue. It doesn't really matter what you think about this conflict, but the Russians are resolved to settle this conflict on their terms, and they're not gonna be swayed from their course, even by Trump. So I think Trump is not going to succeed in basically threatening or sort of blackmailing the Russians into some sort of deal that they're not willing to enter. So I think there's no chance. So it's very difficult, in my opinion, to predict. It's very risky, especially like because he, with a tweet by Medvedev wrote called Donald Trump a grandpa, wrote something mean about Donald Trump, and Donald Trump sent nuclear submarines closer to Russia's borders. I mean, that's like really, I would say it's risky business, right?
Yeah.
It's a major escalation. Yeah. So let's hope things will calm down in that respect. And I think, of course, there are a lot of threats. I mean, the globalists are still in power because the neocons still call some shots. The deep state, like I said earlier, has not been kicked out. So, and these people have to be placated somehow. And I think Trump is trying to maneuver his way sort of like through almost like a political minefield, I would say, trying to find the best way out, what is best, well, for America, because that's his priority, as it should be, because he's the president of the American people. So let's hope, and I'm quite confident, that Trump will succeed in a sort of course correction and going back to what he really represents, which is the interests of the American people, the interests of the American nation, and not the interests of the deep state who wants the United States to still play the global policeman, so to speak.
Right, right. Very, very well said. Very well said. Let's just chat about a little bit about your brand new edition of Guillaume Fay, the French theorist's work, Arche of Futurism, very influential on this channel. I refer to it quite often. You have an excellent intro in here forward. Yeah, introduction. Excellent. A wonderful summation of Arche of Future. Arche of Futurism as a paradigm for understanding what's happening in our world today. Can you tell us a little bit about what was behind this new edition from Arctos Publishing?
Well, we publish a new edition because it's very timely now, because we live in an archaic futurist world more than ever before, and we can see it all over the world. We can see Confucian China, which nominally calls itself communist, but is not really communist, right? I mean, it is actually driven by millennia-old ideals and values. It is a deeply traditional Confucian society, and it is ultra-modern and very sophisticated in terms of technology. I mean, if you look at all the videos that people regularly post on X of stuff that's going on in China, it's like completely wild, right? Like, it seems the West is completely behind. And I mean, India, we have India, another civilization state under Modi, with a revival of the traditional Hindu culture, but at the same time, really doing space exploration and entering the space race. I mean, this is also archaic futurism. Well, then, of course, you had the whole idea with Elon Musk going to Mars in the United States. Totally archaic futurist, especially if you steer the whole idea of progress and technology away from the woke disease, so to speak, right, which is happening at least in the United States and in other civilization states across the world, like the Russian Federation, India, and China. It is not happening in Western Europe, because I think the headquarters of Woke Incorporated has shifted from the United States, in my opinion, to Germany now, because it's the most powerful country in the European Union. But the European Union itself is now the embodiment of global homo, so to speak.
So
archaic futurism is the future, though, because especially now with the advent of artificial intelligence, which cannot be stopped. And I was just recently read a tweet by an AfD politician called Maximilian Krah on X. Mm-hmm. And he said that the European Union simply doesn't understand what is going on. So Germany got rid of nuclear power plants and cheap Russian energy at the same time, several years ago, like ruining its industry, basically. And has a total obsession with environmentalism and green renewal and I don't know, renewable energy, electric cars, all that stuff. While Donald Trump and his administration got rid of restrictions, basically left and right, and drill, baby, drill, right?
Because
in this new race, which is, I would compare it to the space race that occurred in the Cold War between the Soviet Union and the United States, where everybody was trying to go further into space and top the other party. Now we have the artificial intelligence race, and I think the two top players are definitely China and the United States. Yeah. And whoever comes out on top will rule the world, basically. That's how it is, because artificial intelligence is a genie. It's already out of the bottle. You cannot put it back in. The European Union will be left behind because they don't even have the energy right now required to power artificial intelligence. I mean, you know how much energy even like the whole Bitcoin thing requires. Artificial intelligence, like tenfold. So
I like how in El Salvador, where they're mining mining for Bitcoin being powered by volcanoes, basically, at this point. It's just it's incredible. I would just, even the way you were talking about it, how we're seeing cities like Jeddah, you know, and nations like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, you mentioned like Shanghai or Beijing, Dubai, all of the cities of the future are actually being built in very, very traditionalist societies, whereas we have a couple of new ones, maybe Vegas or something like that, where you and I have hung out before. But most of our cities in Europe and the United States, they tend to be more museums. Like, they tend to be more historical, the great cathedrals or whatever, or just Philadelphia, like, you know, where 1776. But these other places are like, their cities look to the future. Ours look to the past. Both are great. But it is fascinating that the new ones, the real high-tech sort of cyberpunk cities, are being found in some of the most traditionalist societies.
Absolutely. I think it also ties in with multipolarity, because in the multipolar age, which we're living in right now, which I also call the new age of empires, we have civilization states. You wrote a great introduction to this book, by the way. So I want to thank you again. So in this new age of empires, in this multipolar world, we have different civilization states that basically reassert their identity in a very, very, very strong way, but forward-looking, because you just put it very, very, very nicely when you said that in the West, especially in Western Europe, culture, history is a museum. People look at it, this is how it used to be, but now we're all cool with gay pride parades and, you know, techno discos and bars and all that stuff. So, I mean, we can look at the Roman sculptures and the Colosseum, you know, out of pure curiosity or interest. But people don't really feel a connection to their own ancestors anymore. They don't feel that these people that built the Colosseum, that they are actually a direct line millennia back, basically, that an unbroken, basically, succession of generations that built the Roman Empire And the people in Western Europe today are the direct descendants, but they themselves don't see it because they have lost touch with their identity. So they might still be interested in technological progress, but it's completely divorced from any kind of values and from any kind of rootedness. So while in other countries like China, you have rootedness. In Russia, you have rootedness. I think in America, it's coming back, the rootedness, because people understand that identity is also rooted in the soil, right?
So
it is the soil and the soul of a people that creates identity. So I wouldn't say that immigration per se is a bad thing. Of course, you can have immigration, but it should be quality immigration. It should be immigration of people that can help you build the future.
Build your civilization, yeah.
Without giving up your, I would say, your ethnic soul in the process.
Right.
Like the West has done for so long. So you need to tap into the values and the heritage that made your civilization, your culture great in the first place, and utilize them to move forward in the future. And Guillaume Fay, in the book Archaea Futurism, he makes a very good, he mentions that like a lot of the spaceships and the rockets, the NASA rockets, they carry the classical Greek and Roman names, like Apollo mission, for example.
Apollo, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is total Archaea Futurism right there, because you acknowledge your heritage, your myths, basically, while at the same time trying to move further and further into space to spread your civilization. And that this is the spirit of Archaea Futurism.
It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I couldn't recommend a book more for people to read, as well as Konstantin von Hofmeister's Multipolarity and Esoteric Trumpism. Where can people keep up with you, Konstantin? I know you have a great... You're a Siberia Substack. Where would you? We've got links down below to keep up with your work. Where would you like people to go?
Yeah, actually, I have EuroSiberia.net, which is my personal Substack, where I post several essays per week on geopolitics, culture, and philosophy. And I actually have a new project that I started a couple of weeks ago. It's called Multipolar Press. On which I publish a variety of authors, including Alexander Dugin. We publish the exclusive English language articles that Alexander Dugin writes, translated from Russian, exclusively on Multipolar Press. Authors from all over the world, basically, to explore the notion of multipolarity and its importance in today's discourse. I mean, it is... Totally. Marco Rubio talks about it nowadays. I mean, he mentioned it. J.D. Vance basically admitted it in his speech at the Naval Academy in Annapolis, saying basically we live in a multipolar world. I mean, you cannot ignore it anymore. And so Multipolar Press is basically a think tank that publishes different views on the emerging new civilizational order that we're now experiencing in the globe. So, and then, of course, we have... I'm the editor-in-chief of Arctos, so there's also Arctos Journal, on which we publish a variety of conservative voices that basically reflect the Arctos' motto, which is to make anti-globalism global.
I love that. I love that so much. I think he sent me a hat, make anti-globalism global again, or something like that. So everyone, make sure you click on the links below and keep up with Konstantin's amazing work. And what I love so much about all of those resources is you're going to see how, when we talk about a new conservative age rising, you're going to see how it's manifesting itself in its unique and rich tapestry-like ways all over the world civilizationally. It's absolutely beautiful stuff, and no one does it like Konstantin does, and Arctos and the Substack and the like. So, always great to see you, my friend. Let's have you back very, very soon.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Turley Talks podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, and share this episode with your friends. Help us defeat the fake news media and rank as the number one news and commentary podcast all over the world. Come back again tomorrow for another episode celebrating the rise of a new conservative age.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.